A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging these arts organizations. Today, we'll hear about an opera production that embraces some of the most vulnerable members of society by bringing its story of giving and charity directly to them and welcoming them into the cast. On-site Opera, known for choosing theme-appropriate venues, will be staging Amal and the Night Visitors at the New York City Soup Kitchen with a chorus made up of singers who themselves have experienced homelessness. I'll speak with On-site Opera's General and Artistic Director Eric Einhorn about what he hopes this production brings to the community. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. The San Francisco Symphony has reached an agreement with its musicians 1 week before their current contract was due to expire. San Francisco Classical Voice reported that the contract announced November 26 raises the musicians' minimum weekly salary to $3,263, up from $3,200, with an additional increase to $3,570 in the last 6 months of the contract, which runs through November 26, 2022. The contract includes other changes, such as increased retirement benefits and sharing of medical insurance premiums starting in the second year. The New York Philharmonic has extended its partnership with the Shanghai Symphony Orchestra for 4 years, agreeing to continue the Shanghai Orchestra Academy and other programs through 2022. As part of the agreement, the Philharmonic said in a statement that it will give multiple performances during an annual tour of China, and musicians will provide instruction at the Shanghai Orchestra Academy 4 times a season. The agreement was first reached in 2014. The Orchestra Academy has provided opportunities for Chinese students such as master classes, lessons, music coaching, and side-by-side performances with New York Philharmonic musicians. The Philharmonic will release more details about its 2019 China tour at a later date. Conductor Harold Farberman has passed away at the age of 89. Commentator Norman Lebrecht reported the death on his blog, The Slip Disc, citing friends of the conductor, who served as music director of the Colorado Springs Orchestra and the Oakland Symphony Orchestra. A percussion student at Juilliard, Farberman studied composition at the New England Conservatory and with Aaron Copland at Tanglewood. He was known for promoting the music of Charles Ives and recorded all 4 of Ives' symphonies. He was a founder of the Conductors Guild, serving as its first president, and the Conductors Institute, which is now housed at Bard College, and counted among his students Marin Alsop and Leon Botstein. The music world also lost violinist Nina Belina, who founded the Bacchanalia Festival. According to the New York Times, Belina was one of the first Soviet emigres to return after the Cold War to perform in Russia. Born in Moscow, she emigrated to the U.S. in 1977 and had her American debut the following year at the 92nd Street Y, known then as the Young Men's and Young Women's Hebrew Association. She went on to teach at the Manus College of Music and perform at Carnegie Hall and with several American orchestras. Belina was 81. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. The holiday season for many is all about giving, sharing, and community. When New York-based On-site Opera began considering a production of Giancarlo Minotti's Amal and the Night Visitors, General and Artistic Director Eric Einhorn realized that the narrative, based on the Christmas Nativity, opened up a number of unique opportunities to reach and interact with the community. Founded in 2012, On-site Opera is known for staging operas in venues related to or appropriate to the production. Past examples have included Rameau's Pygmalion at Madame Tussaud's Wax Museum, a premiere of the family-friendly work Rhoda and the Fossil Hunt at the American Museum of Natural History's Dinosaur Hall, and Ricky Ian Gordon's Morning Star, an opera that tells the story of a Jewish immigrant family affected by the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire that was presented at the Eldridge Museum on the Lower East Side. In the case of Amal and the Night Visitors, the resulting production will be staged at the Holy Apostles Soup Kitchen. And in partnership with Breaking Ground, which provides housing and other support for the homeless, will feature a chorus comprised of those who have experienced homelessness at some time in their lives. The performances will take place Thursday, December 6th through Saturday, December 8th. I spoke with Einhorn, one of OnSite's co-founders, about this production and how it highlights OnSite Opera's overall mission and goals.
Amal was a piece I'd wanted to do for a very long time, and as a site-specific producer, I couldn't quite figure out how I could make that leap to producing it in New York, because originally it's a story set in ancient Israel on First Christmas Eve, so there aren't a lot of immediate things that pop in terms of ways to bring it to a more contemporary urban setting. But in being committed to trying to produce it, I stripped the piece away to its core and its main messages of generosity and selflessness and sacrifice. And in looking at that, the characters of Amal and his mother, even though they have nothing, and Amal is disabled and sick, both of them manage to exhibit generosity in their own ways, regardless of their situation, that it really shows a lesson of, despite your current situation, there is always somebody who is a little worse off, having a slightly worse day than you. We're all in a relative position, and it's about being able to identify that and find those opportunities for generosity despite what your own situation might be. So in paring it down to its essence, I then had to build it back up again to how are we going to actually produce it. And I thought about who Amal and his mother would be in a contemporary setting. And that led me to, they would be among the many people who are beneficiaries and patrons of soup kitchens throughout the city, people who are housing vulnerable, who are food vulnerable and unstable. So that kind of galvanized a location or a type of location. And that's what led us to the Holy Apostles Soup Kitchen, in that they serve thousands of people a month for now going on several decades. And it's an institution in New York City, and a real beacon of what community service and serving that community can look like. So that was an inspiring way to begin and finding a venue for that. And then in digging deeper into the opera, on the page, if you look at the piece literally, it's about the three kings visiting Amal and his mother, seeking shelter for the night. And in that context, Amal and his mother give the king's gifts, the shepherds in their community give the king's gifts. And that idea of the poor giving their gifts to these members of royalty, these rich men who visit for the night, felt less than authentic in a contemporary setting. Didn't feel like the message that we wanted to put out there. It seemed like there was another way in. And so we're flipping the narrative a little bit, and the kings will appear to be homeless on the street. They will be dressed in a way that is clear that they are in a situation more difficult than Amal and his mother. And the costume research is based on real people seen around New York, that whole experience. And so Amal, his mother, and the shepherds chorus that are generous towards these kings who are now in a more difficult position than they are, that amplifies, I think, the generosity piece of it. That even though these people who are living in a shelter, we presume, or living in the shelter system, they meet these kings, these people who look like they've been on the street, and give what they can so that they are generous despite their condition and their situation. And in telling a story like that, I I felt it was really important and a really wonderful opportunity to have it not be a story about certain people, but a story with certain people. I had been inspired by things I had read about the Dallas Street Choir, which is a choir made up of homeless people in Dallas that has grown to a significant musical body. Mm. As well, I had been reading about a work done in the UK about sex workers that had utilized not only the stories of sex workers, but using those same people in the performance of it. So it's about creating a narrative world that doesn't appropriate the stories of certain people, but uses them as actual participants to create a world of honesty and truth.
So how have you worked the rehearsals and the production in order to welcome these people into the cast and bring it all together?
Well, we started with the community chorus back in the summer. We held information sessions. We held auditions, which really weren't auditions, but they were individual meet and greets, essentially, where people would come in and sing something for us, whether it was Happy Birthday, whether it was a scale, whether it was some came in with original compositions. And we just laid the groundwork early, and we had a great partner in that. We worked with an organization called Breaking Ground, which is the largest supportive housing provider in New York City. And in partnering with them, we started at one of their residential buildings in Times Square, and they coordinated the casting call, basically, and helped us manage those rehearsals and manage personnel. They've been fantastic partners in all of it. And we collectively made a decision to treat our rehearsals and the process with the chorus as we would a professional chorus. The expectation is timely arrival, focus in rehearsal, respecting your colleagues, making the room a safe place to be creative. And it's been incredible to be in the room with our chorus, because they have taken to that process like it's second nature to them. It's been really inspiring, and to think about the journeys that all of these people have been through and what many still struggle with in their daily lives, and yet they still show up on time, they do the work, they are engaged, they are excited. It really speaks to the power of music, to the power of collective music making. It's things that I think we as professionals forget sometimes. We're reminded of in certain circumstances, on those really rare occasions when you have these inspirational experiences. But for so many people, it is just your job. And we lose sight of why we did it in the first place. And working with this chorus has really been inspiring and has helped me, and I know the other soloists and staff members, really reconnect with the joy of making art.
And you mentioned some of the ways that you've tweaked or adapted the opera for this context. Were there any other ways that you made changes, or in working with the chorus, have certain things come up that you've decided to emphasize or approach a different way because you're getting a little bit of feedback and insight from them?
We had been looking throughout this whole process about ways to weave the narratives and experiences of the individual choristers into the opera somehow, to, again, really amplify the honest and truthful element of what it is we're doing. And we didn't really know the correct way in, that we have been and continue to be very sensitive to the participants and their privacy. And we never at any stage of this wanted to seem like we were exploiting these people for their stories. And I've been very open with the members of the chorus about what we're trying to do and why we enjoy working with them and why we created this opportunity to begin with. And it really is to give them all a voice, when so often, as they have themselves have told me, they are voiceless, they feel invisible. and marginalized. And this opportunity has created this forum for simple creative expression, which allows you to reconnect with a group of your peers, where who you are and what's happened to you and your housing status become irrelevant. And that's kind of where I've come to through all of this, is that it's not about sharing necessarily the trials and tribulations of each member of the chorus. There will be some people who have agreed to share some of that in writing, which we're going to share in some way with our audiences, just as a way to introduce the individuals to the audience. But much like, on a greater sense, when we produce sites specifically, you enter into a space that is made for that reason. For whatever story you're telling, the audience is entering into a real soup kitchen. That brings a certain amount of instant connection with the material that you can't get by building a set and going into a theater and having all those trappings. It's just a different fundamental audience experience. And the second layer of that with this production is the fact that these chorus members have all experienced the situation that the story is telling. Many of the people have frequented the Holy Apostles Soup Kitchen, where the opera is taking place. So when I mentioned that that's where we're going to perform, everyone shook their head knowingly. Oh yes, I've been there. I know what the space is. And so there's a connection that the chorus has to the space that will then get passed on to the audience. There's an authentic community we're creating that I think will be incredibly impactful. And it's not about labeling these people. It's not about dissecting their experiences, but just knowing who they are and the fact that they are there literally surrounding the audience, I think is connection enough to their journeys and to the piece itself.
And how did you adapt or work with the space that the soup kitchen provided to make the most of this combination?
Well, that's always an interesting part of the puzzle for us, that we always produce things in spaces that were never intended for live music and theatrical performance. So when we look for a space to produce a show, we have a long list of things we look for, and space for audience, playing space, space for the orchestra. And of course, Holy Apostles has all of those things in spades. And what our plan is to do is to leave the space set up exactly how it is for when it's a soup kitchen, because it's also a functioning church. It all takes place in the sanctuary of the church, but there are just no pews. They have chairs they set up for church services and other things. But when it's a soup kitchen, it's a church sanctuary full of round 10-person banquet tables that they have set up every day. And so that's how the audience will walk in. There'll be a portion of that space kind of carved out where audience seating will be in more traditional rows, just so we can sit more people that will be looking into a portion of the soup kitchen. But like all of our productions, the production itself will happen all around. So the audience will be moving in their chairs. They'll be stationary in one place, but the action will be surrounding them in this soup kitchen setup. The one thing about Amal is that it is part of an initiative we started a few years ago called Opera Free for All. And it's our goal to program one completely free opera production a season. And we've had great feedback and great success with that initiative. But given the themes of this opera, given that it's around the holidays, in lieu of ticket prices, for the show, we are asking audiences to bring a donation of non-perishable food, which will go directly to Holy Apostles Soup Kitchen, following the performance. So it's really engaging the audience in a true community effort.
Well, as you mentioned, this really reflects the whole purpose and mission of on-site opera. What are the goals and the hopes you have each year in planning a season?
The short-term goal is to on a production by production basis to create these experiences for audiences that feel truly connected between piece and space. We never want it to feel like a gimmick. We often leave operas or venues on the cutting room floor because we just can't find that perfect combination. And it's a very lengthy process we go through of repertoire selection and venue selection, because we do have such a solid commitment to our mission and to the audience experience, because that's such a large part of it. If the audience can't engage fully or is not in a position to be because of certain limitations of the venue, then it's frankly not worth being in that space, because the performance itself is really only half of the experience. The other is the people watching it. So each piece is selected for that perfect intersection of story and place. And then on a larger sense, we're just looking for ways to create a well-balanced season, to do pieces that speak to us, that speak to our audience, that highlight certain spaces or kinds of pieces that tell certain kinds of stories. Among the many elements of the genesis of the Amal project was a real desire I had to focus on what opera could do on a larger scale, not just the audience seeing the show and having a positive experience, but what is the power of opera? What is the power of live performance? What kind of engagement can it provide for the audience and for the community as a whole? And the process of doing them all has really opened up a lot of conversations about how to expand upon this kind of programming, really looking at our community engagement initiative. And it's something we are exploring quite a bit to see what the next steps are in this kind of work, to go alongside the more traditional, production that is a little more for the typical opera audience. Of course, we always want audiences of all backgrounds to attend, but there's a variety of possibilities for our audiences.
Well, certainly some of the past examples have really been, you know, very creative. You recently did Frankenstein in the Catacombs of the Greenwood Cemetery. You've also used Mozart's The Secret Gardener in a community garden. What comes first generally, the idea for the production or the venue, or does it really go both ways depending on the circumstance?
It does. It's a chicken or the egg kind of question. Sometimes there's a piece that we really want to do, and then we dig in to find where we could do it in New York. The longer we're around and the more success and notice we have in the community, we are now being approached more and more by venues to bring things to their spaces. So we are being shown a space and saying, can you do something here? And the answer is always yes. There's always something to do. That's what's some of the most exciting parts about running this company is the rules are not set for us. That by design we are a nimble, flexible company that runs on reinvention and innovation every time we produce, and it's just an exciting way to make music and to make theater, to not say, well, this is how we have to do it. That you can show me any space, and I could most likely put an opera there.
Well, New York's opera scene really is, it's very dynamic, very vibrant, and in a lot of ways, it's in stark contrast to what we hear a lot from the more traditional opera world, the hand-wringing, the, oh, our audiences are disappearing. What role do you see on-site opera playing in the broader New York opera scene?
I think all of the small companies in New York, and there's so many fantastic ones that we get to work alongside. We all feed the same scenario. We're all building new audiences, encouraging the current ones through such a wonderful variety of programming. And I think something that on-site can do is, because we are itinerant, essentially, our performance venues are by design all over the city and with growing growing opportunities all over the country, that if we can reach an audience in some non-traditional place that wouldn't have necessarily been exposed to opera before, and it goes beyond what many opera companies focus on, importantly so, but the underserved opera community in any given environment of those people that don't have access for one reason or another, but even people who fit the more traditional opera demographic that just kind of don't know about it or are put off by what they think opera is by taking opera to these interesting places and doing it in a way that's engaging and immersive. It breaks down a lot of barriers for people. So it's been really incredible to see that in our audiences. And I don't know what the long-term effect of that is, but one hopes that by being engaged in a performance that they see at on-site, they'll see a listing for another opera and say, oh yeah, I went to an opera before and I really liked it, so I'm going to try that. And so, especially in New York, you have that opportunity where there's some kind of operatic experience happening, you know, several times a week. So you have such a rich opportunity, and we're just part of that really robust landscape.
So now, once following this production, what's next on your season?
We are collaborating with the Metropolitan Museum of Art and American Lyric Theater on a world premiere commission for a piece in a gallery at the Met Museum based on The Tale of Genji, which is an ancient Japanese novel written by a woman. And the piece focuses on that female author and her process and trials of being an author in Japanese court 1,000 years ago, and the fact that we are still reading her work. And it'll be in this wonderfully evocative gallery with great Chinese and Japanese architecture, with a mix of Western and Eastern instruments, written by Michi Wianco and Deborah Brevoort, the composer and librettist. And it's an incredibly exciting endeavor, and I'm thrilled to be working with the Met Museum as well as American Lyric Theater. They're great partners in developing new site-specific work.
That was Eric Einhorn, General and Artistic Director of On-Site Opera. The performances will be held December 6th, 7th, and 8th at the Holy Apostles Soup Kitchen in New York. Admission is free, but patrons are asked to bring a donation of non-perishable food items to be donated to the soup kitchen. More information on the performance and the opera company can be found at osopera.org. I hope you enjoy these conversations that I bring you each week on A Tempo that focus on the changing dynamics and challenges in the arts world. But remember that programs like this are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for your support of the Classical Network. Thank you for listening to A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. You can listen to past programs of A Tempo by going to our arts and cultural news page at wwfm.org or searching for A Tempo on our program page. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.